Today's daf is Yuma daf Samach Zayin. We left off in daf Samach Vav Amid Beis at the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to continue with the Seir LaAzazel. It's going to tell us how they would walk the Seir LaAzazel out to the cliff and the actual performing of the throwing the Seir LaAzazel off of the cliff. The Gemara is going to tell us the history and the details of exactly how they would place the Lashon Shel Zohoris, where they would place the two parts of the red strand that they would put on the one part on the goat's head and the other parts somewhere else, and how historically that developed and changed over time. On the bottom of Amud Aleph, there's going to be Machlokas. Once the Seir is broken up into, it's dismembered into a bunch of different limbs as it's after it's thrown off the cliff, if someone finds those limbs, are they allowed to use them? Is it Mutar Bahana or is it Asar Bahana? The Gemara is then going to go into the etymology of the word Azazel, what exactly that means, why we call this the Seir LaAzazel. And then the last piece before the Mishnah is going to give us three different opinions about when the person who does the shiluach is metameh begadim, at what point does he become tameh in the process. The Mishnah quotes two opinions. We're going to have a third opinion brought in the Gemara. And then the Mishnah on the bottom of Samach Zayin and Beis, if we get to it, goes through the continuation of the Kohen Gadol's Avoda after we're discussing now the Seir, which is done by the Mishalech, the guy who's bringing him out, to the cliff. That's not the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol's got a job to continue to do in the Beis HaMikdash with the rest of the Avodas Hayom. So we're going to go back to the Kohen Gadol in the next Mishnah. So let's pick up from the Mishnah here on the bottom of Samach Vavim Days. Miyakiri Yerushalayim Ayum Lavan Osa Atzuka Rishona. They would have very special people from Yerushalayim. The Chashuve Yerushalayim would accompany the fellow who's bringing the Seir until the first Sukkah. There were a series of huts set up on the road, as the Mishnah is going to elaborate on. So a special group of people would walk with him until the first Sukkah. The Achronim work on exactly why they would have to have Chashuva people go with him to get to the first Sukkah. So some of the Achronim explained that it was to be Noe Kavod with the Mitzvah Sashiluach, to show that it's not a Bizayon to do the Mitzvah Sashiluach, and that's why they Dafka wanted to put Chashuva Yerushalayim, to show that you should be Mechabid this Mitzvah. That's something that Siv explains in the Gemara we had yesterday, that the people that would yank at the hair of either the fellow or the goat, but either way it was they would be mevaza. It was a big bizayin to the whole thing. So it was that's why we provided a yishuv adas to know that they weren't bavliim, because anyone from Bavel would be embarrassed by that's how they behaved, because it's not appropriate to be mevaza this. Adrab, the Mishnah says we should be mechabed it. We should send the Akira Yerushalayim. We should send the most chashva people from Yerushalayim. Other achronim say that it's not because of kavod, but rather, and Adrabi, you don't want to give too much kavod to the Azazel. Azazel is representative of Esav or Saros Shel Esav or something like that. Rather, it's so that the person shouldn't be terrified to go out all alone into the Midbar. We don't want him to become scared that he's traveling in this dangerous area all by himself. So we make sure that he has accompaniment, that people go with him. Eser Sukkos Mirushalayim Atzuk Tishimris. There were 10 huts set up from Yerushalayim until the point of the Tzuk, until this point, 90 ris in total of distance from one place to the other. Shivu Mechzel Lekol Mil, 7.5 ris for each meal, which means that if you do the math, Rashi points out, Hare Letishim Ris Yud Beis Mil Vemir Alf Masal. So if it's 7.5 ris in a meal, and there are 90 ris, that means there were 12 meal from Yerushalayim till the Tzuk, and there were eleven stops. There were 11 masaos, 11 travels that he would go. Point A to point B is 1, point B to point C is 2, etc. So Mirushalayim Lusukah Rishona Masa Echad, from Yerushalayim to the first Sukkah is 1, Misukah Lusukah Ad Yud Sukkos Tes Masaos, from Sukkah 1 to Sukkah 2, Sukkah 2 to Sukkah 3, etc. is another 9, and Hare Yud Masaos, so that's 10 travels, Umisukah Achron Lutzuk Masa Echad, and then the 11th time he would travel was from the last Sukkah until the Tzuk. So between all of the 10 Sukkos and the ultimate destination, it was 11 times that he would travel. So if you have have 11 times that you're traveling, and there's a total of 12 meal, that means you're going one meal each time, except for one of them, one time you're going to go two meal. So that's the way it worked out. Each time you would travel, it was exactly one meal. By the way, one meal is alpayim amma, is 2,000 amos, which happens to be tchum Shabbos. So they would travel exactly the tchum Shabbos, and then the last time he would travel from the last sukkah until the tzuk, that was double that distance. That was two mil. He would go 4,000 amos in the last leg of the journey. So that's what the Mishnah is going to explain, that no one would accompany him all the way on the last one, because that would be going outside of the tchum. But to go from each one, they had people stationed in each of the sukkos to meet up with him and to walk with him to the next stop. And everyone was allowed to go from where they were stationed till the next stop, because it was not beyond their tchum Shabbos. They set up the tchum, they set up their makum yishuv, where they're going to spend yantiv and Shabbos in that sukkah. So I'll call sukkah v'sukkah omlo hare mazon v'hare mayim. In each sukkah they would offer him food and drink. By each one, they would offer him what to eat. So Rashi says, why would they do this? Rashi, based on the Gemara we're going to see later today, in order that he should be comfortable to know that he has, that if he needs it, he has what to eat, and that will make it easier for him to fast. Because that's the whole purpose of the food, says Rashi. So some of the Achronim read into Rashi that if the whole purpose of the food is just to make him feel good, it sounds like the purpose of the food is not to be eaten. That it sounds like, according to Rashi, if he actually wants to eat it, the answer is going to be no, you can't eat it. We just offer it to him to make him feel better, to make him feel like he has what to eat, if he needs what to eat, and that will make his fast go a little bit better. The Rambam, in the third paragraph of Hilchos Avodas Yom Kippurim, seems to say clearly not that way. That if the Rambam says, if it's kashal kocho, he becomes weak and he needs to eat, so ochel, so then he gets to eat, meaning we're not offering it to him so that we could just pull back last minute if he says yes. We offer it to him, and if he says yes, good, then we're going to give him what to eat. So the Tiferes Yisrael asks on the Shittas HaRambam that he's allowed, that he's actually allowed to eat, in order to do the mitzvah shiluach. Why is he allowed to eat? Because that's the only way we could accomplish the mitzvah shiluach. But the shiluach is not ma'akev. So why are we so interested? We're going to let him violate achila, eating on Yom Kippur, to do the mitzvah shiluach. The whole mitzvah is not even ma'akev. So he says that maybe since the Torah is a riboy, when it calls it ish iti, afilu b'shabbos, afilu b'tuma, so we see that the shiluach al yidei ish iti is docha any possible iser that one would violate by doing the mitzvah shiluach. That it's on the word iti, which is, this is his whole job, is to do the shiluach. So you see, afilu b'shabbos, afilu b'tuma. Rav Soloveitchik points out that it sounds that that from, again, like the Shita, so he makes the same diuk in the Rambam, very clear from the Rambam, that there is a heter to eat. I'll call sukkah v'sukkah omer lo harimozim v'harimayim im kashal kocho v'tzorach lechel ochel umeyol om lehu tzorach adam l'kach. The Rambam points out historically, like the Gemara does, no one ever actually had to eat, but that he would be allowed to. So the Rav Soloveitchik points out, l'chora, this heter is just like a heter akrava, just like he's allowed to be makrav karbanos pnim, even though there's so much malacha being done when you do all the karbanos, so too he's allowed to eat and drink in order to be mekayim the mitzvah of the shiluach, anything that helps in the avodas hayom, one is allowed to do. And it seems from there, therefore, says Rav Soloveitchik, that there's a connection between the isur malacha on Yom Kippur and the isur achilav shtia on Yom Kippur, that both of those isurim emerge from the kedusha Hayom of Yom Kippur. And he says that's what it sounds like from the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Shvi'is Zasar. The Rambam writes, Mitzvah sase lishvos mi malacha basu lachodesh ha-shvi'i shenemar Shabbos Shabbos unulachem. That's the very first halacha in Hilchos Shvi'is Zasar. And then in halacha Dalet he says, Mitzvah sase acheres yesh b'yom ha-kippurim v'hi lishvos bo me'achilu v'shtia shenemar tanus nafshoseichem. So the Rambam connects both the Yisra Malacha and the Yisra Achila, puts them both in Hilchos Shvi'is Zasar. They're both together as part of the chelik of the Kedusha Sayyam, that they both emerge from the Kedusha Sayyam. So Salvation just points out that Rav Lazar HaKalir disagrees with the Rambam. In his piyut, one of his piyutim for Yom Kippurim, Shoshana Emek HaYoma, he connects, he gives Yom HaKippurim three separate names. He calls it Yom HaKippurim, he calls it Shabbos Shabbason, and he calls it Tzom HaAsar. Yom HaKippurim relates to the Avodas HaYom, the Avoda that accomplishes the Kapara. And that's what the Rambam would categorize in Hilchos Avodas Yom HaKippurim. Then you have Shabbos Shabbason is the Kedusha HaYom and the Isra Malacha, that you're not allowed to do Malacha because it's part of the it's part of a set of Yomim Tovim, and it has a Kedusha HaYom that's Asur B'Malacha. Soma Asur is the Yisra Achil Ushtia that we have on Yom HaKippurim. The fact that it has three separate names tells us that they don't all derive from the same Kedusha, from the same source, that these are three separate elements of the day, and they're not all connected. So our Salvechik suggests, the Mainaf Kamina says, maybe the following. The Beis HaLevi has a discussion in the Shuvas and Chel Galv Simin Yilches, what about a Mumer L'Chalal Yom HaKippurim, if he's like a Mumer L'Chalal Shabbosos, where Shechita would be possible. You have someone who keeps Shabbos, let's say, but he's a Mumer L'Chal Yom HaKippurim. So do we trust his Shechita? Is his Shechita necessarily possible or not? So let's assume a Mumer L'Chal Yom HaKippurim is Shechita is possible. What if he's not Mechal Yom HaKippurim Basiyas Malacha, but he eats on Yom Kippur? Would his Shechita be possible then also? So if you say like the Rambam that eating on Yom Kippur and being Mechal and doing Malacha on Yom Kippur come from the same place, that it's all from the same Kedusha, it all emerges from the Kedusha Seyom, so then it's one and the same. It's completely the same. But if you say like the Kalir that it's not, that it doesn't emerge from the same place, it's two separate inyanim. So maybe doing malacha on Yom Kippur is one thing, but actually, but eating on Yom Kippur is a totally separate kind of iser. So the Mishnah continues, third line. So they would accompany him from one sukkah to the next, except for the last person who was stationed in the last sukkah would not be able to accompany him all the way to the tzuk. Rather, he would go to his edge of Tchum Shabbos, his 2,000 amos, and he would stand one meal away, one Tchum Shabbos away from the tzuk, and watch as the fellow who's taking the seer goes and does what he has to do. Why does he have to stand there and watch? Can't he just walk in and then come back? What's the point of watching him? So the Sefer Siach Yitzchak says that it's to see that he's doing it properly, especially based on the Zohar. The Zohar writes that the Mishaleach HaSasayir was a pogum and a balmum, so it's the kind of person you would be choshe that maybe he wouldn't be doing it properly. So if that's the case, you certainly want someone keeping an eye out on him. In the Biur Yadav Ovir, he quotes Sefer Chukas Hayom, who says that the reason they had to stand near him was so that because all karbonos need the bailim omir al gabehem. So the karbonos sibur has a din of a maimed. They have the maimed of that's stationed each week in the Beis Hamikdash. Because the maimed is klali, the bailim is klal Yisrael. So the bailim omir al gabehem is accomplished by a representative sample of klal Yisrael. That's great for everything that's being done in the Beis Hamikdash. What about this karbon? What about the seal azazel? Where's the maimed? You need someone. You need the bailim omir al gabehem. So this person would represent Klal Yisrael as the Omer al Gabayim. That assumes that the Seir Azazel has a din carbon. If we're going to consider it like a carbon, so then there might be this din of Omer al Gabayim. So we'll put that on the list as we continue through with a halacha. So the Seir Azazel, to what extent it has a din of carbon? So we see it as a din shchita on some level. So it has some dinim of an actual carbon. Mahoy ose, what did they do? So cholik lashon shel zuhuris chetzio kasher besela. They would split up a red strand and tie half of it on a rock and half of it between the horns of the animal, and they would push it off of the cliff backwards. Vumis galgal the yorid, and he would roll off the cliff. Veloya magia lechatzi ahar atshanase varim evarim, and he wouldn't. The animal wouldn't even get halfway down the cliff till it was completely dismembered. It was broken up into a whole bunch of different limbs. So Tosi Shadim raises the question over here: how is he allowed to bring the lashon shel zahuris to the midbar? He's carrying something out chutz l'tchum. He's not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So he says either that he was maybe the lashon shel zahuris either before Yom Kippur or he brought it on the behemah. The behemah was carrying it already the whole time, so it's mechamer kala achar yad, and b'makom mitzvah they weren't gozer on mechamer kala achar yad, but it wasn't his problem to carry it. The whole question is a little bit strange. If it was part of the avoda, how is he allowed to walk outside of the tchum? The whole point is that that's part of the avoda. The indication of the kasha, the implication of the kasha, is that maybe that's not part of the avoda, that the lashon shel zehuris is accomplishes something, but maybe not, that's not considered an actual chelik of the avoda. We have this concept of letting the animal carry something. The Gemara said so in Pesachim by the bringing of the knife for the Karban Pesach. Bein our karnayim shel Karban Pesach and erev Pesach shechal b'Shabbos. When erev Pesach is chal b'Shabbos, how do we get the knife there to do the shechita? So the Gemara had said such an idea that we put it at bein karnav of the animal and let the animal be the one who carries it. B'makom mitzvah we allow such a mechamer kila achar yad. So minchas chinuch in the Mosach Hashabbos, minchas chinuch in the chelek where he talks all about the malachas of Shabbos, is mochiach from the Tosfos Yeshanim that the yisur of mechamer is even on a behemoth that doesn't belong to you, because he considers it mechamer. He needs to say that it's mechamer kila achar yad, and that's why it's mutter b'makom mitzvah. Because otherwise it would be a violation of mechamer, but this animal doesn't belong to him. So you see that the Yisr mechamer is not only for your own animal, the animal belongs to Klal Yisrael. It doesn't belong to him. The Reb Chaim, they quote B'Shem Reb Chaim to answer this kasha of how they were allowed to bring Lashon Shel Zehuris on the Behema. What about mechamer? That the Yikr Din of Lashon Shel Zehuris on the Sir Mishtaleach, he says, is a chova be'etzam ashiluach, that it's called Sir Mishtaleach im HaLashon Shel Zahoris. That unlike what we were saying before, this is part of the avoda, and that's the answer to the kasha. I mean, we said it's so obvious. Of course, it's part of the avoda. So he says that he has rayas that you have to say that the lashon shel zahoris is a chelek of the avoda. Meaning, the implication earlier was that the lashon shel zahoris we would tie it just to make sure that we don't confuse the seir la'azazel with the seir la'ashem. So he says no. When the Gemara said that was only the reason of why we tie it bein our karnayim as opposed to around the neck of the animal. Meaning we tie it in that location so that we don't get confused between the two animals. But the ikur din of the lashon is a chova for the seir mishtaleach. That's how Reb Chaim says, and he explains based on that the din that there's a shear for the lashon of the zahoris. The Gemara previously had said how large it has to be. What do you mean how large it has to be? If it's just a simon to know which one is which, so who cares how large? Why would there have to be any shear? But no, it's a chelik of the avoda. So if it's a chelik of the avoda, so then it has a certain shear in size, and that would explain why it's not a violation of mechamer, why you're allowed to do it on Yom Tov. The other kasha, the other Hilchos Shabbos kasha that the Achronim asked, the Mikdash David raises the question, how are they allowed to tie it? Ben Karnav, it's a kasha shel kayama. You never plan on untying it. In a kasha shel kayama, you're not allowed to tie in Shabbos. So how's the kshira docha Shabbos in Yom HaKippurim? Again, if you say like Reb Chaim that it's all part of the avoda, you're not going to have a kasha. But if you say that it's really not part of the avoda, it's just something that we do, so then how are you allowed to tie it? So the Mikdash David says that even if it's even if you say that it's not a kesher gomer, you're still going to have a problem. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda holds that even an aniva, even tying a bow, Rabbi Yehuda holds zasar on Shabbos. So at least the l'shitas Rabbi Yehuda, you can have a problem, even if you don't want to tie a kesher shel kayama. So in the Tshuvas Maril Diskin, he has an interesting idea that would, if accepted, would have a significant impact on the halachos of kosher and perhaps some other malachos of Shabbos as well. Where he says that the idea of a kesher shel kayama is something that you need l'kiyum, that you need it to last a long time. When it comes to the seir mishtaleach, we tie the strand on, we don't need it for that long. It's just that we're not going to run down the cliff after it to untie it, because it's done, we don't need it anymore. But for a short amount of time, you need it. So something that you just leave there because you leave there, but not because you want it there, he suggests does not have a din of a kesher shel kayama, even though you never plan on untying it. So he says, based on that, so the Tel Torah raises the kasha. That's Vari. He says Rashi Masechta Sukkah says that even in that situation it's considered kesher kayama. Rashi Masechta Sukkah talks about tying the lulav on Yom Tov, that it's a violation of kesher shel kayama. What do you mean? I only need it for 2 minutes when I'm taking the lulav. Afterwards, I don't need it. Yeah, but you're going to leave it that way, and the fact that you're going to leave it that way makes it a kesher shel kayama. So. Apparently, unlike the Meryl Diskin, other Achronim are not convinced that this is correct la halacha. People have such a a concern when it comes to connecting to things, to tofer, that with baby diapers they have these sticky things. So when you put the tab, so when you connect the tab onto the baby, you know it's not going to last very long because you're going to have to change the baby's diaper, so it's not meant to be shel kayama. But the post can point out, what about after you remove the soiled diaper? So you want to wrap it up in a neat package so that it doesn't get all over the place. So one of you use the tabs to tab it shut, to close it shut, and then you throw it in the garbage that way. So they point out that maybe you shouldn't do that on Shabbos because it's shel kayama, it's meant to stay there forever like that, you never plan on undoing it again. So if you say to the Maril Diskin, no problem, no, you only need it till you get to the garbage can. Once you get to the garbage can, you don't care what happens to it. So then it wouldn't be a problem. But again, the Rov HaKronim seem to assume, not like the Maril Diskin, on that particular point. Okay, so then we said that they would push it off the cliff, and the animal would become dismembered as it falls down the cliff. The Malbim writes that this was a nes, because the seir, the teva of a goat is medalig al harim u'mekapitz al gvaos, that he doesn't have such problems with this kind of terrain. So that's a part of the nes of what would happen on Yom Kippur, and that's what the Yerushalmi says, that it was only in the days of Shimon HaTzadik. Once Shimon HaTzadik died, they would push it off the cliff, and the animal would just run away. The animal would straighten itself out and would run away, and the srikim would eat it. People would eat it. We'll see later in the Gemara. So the Yerushalmi also says that if it would run away after you sent to the Rosh Hatzuk, there's no more tumas begadim because you already were mekayim the din of shiluach. Okay, so that's the Yerushalmi. So says the Mishnah further now. So now the fellow who sent it away has done his job. So what does he do for the rest of the day? So above yashvlo tachas sukkah achrona. So he goes back and he sits in the last sukkah. He goes back to meal to the last sukkah and he stays there. Achetachshach. He stays there until it gets dark. Even though normally the halacha is someone who goes chutz l'tchum, even bereshus is only allowed to go 2,000 amos from the place where he ends up. Over here we allow him to go all the way back. Rashi explains lefisha huma'una v'chalash va'od shiari lamud yichidi b'midbar shetachshach. He's fasting and he's weak and he's afraid to be out there all alone, so we let him come back. We don't want him out there in the dark. We let him come back even more than the 2,000 amos. So at what point does he have tumas begadim? At what point do his begadim become tame? Mishiyatzo chutz l'chomus Yerushalayim. As soon as he leaves the walls of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Shimon Omer, mishastuch yasul tzuk. Now only once he's actually shoved the animal off of the cliff, only then is he metame begadim. The Ramban writes in his commentary on Chumash, that why is he mitame begadim at all? What's the what did he do that makes him tame? So he says the whole inyan of the seir is to take away the ruach tuma from the land, and that's why everyone was rushing it out, wanted this thing out of there because it represents the ruach tuma. So someone who is involved with such dirty work of his misasik betuma becomes tame. That's what the Amar Veshemesh says, that the inyan of the seer is a shochad, it's a doron, it's a gift, it's a bribe to the satan. So you can't give a bribe to the satan without becoming affected by the satan in some way or another. Even though it's a great mitzvah, you're doing a wonderful thing, but still you can't. It's impossible to do business with the satan without having it affect a person in one way or another. The Meshchachm writes that all the avodas that are metame begadim, if you notice any avoda that causes any sort of tuma is shaykh to kedusha in one way or another. The Seir Mishtaleach comes from bifnim, meaning it didn't start chutz Yerushalayim. It comes from inside the Parah Aduma, where the Zorik the Dam keneged the Olam Moed, the Tziporim Mitzoro that they shecht b'chutz, the Egel Arufa that they do entirely b'chutz are not metame, because that stuff is entirely b'chutz. Things that are entirely b'chutz, that have no shaychus to kedusha, are not going to have tuma. And that fits in very, very nicely with the concept that tuma and kedusha are really two sides of the same coin. Tuma comes with tuma fills the void when kedusha goes away. When you remove kedusha from something, tuma fills the void. That's why Meisei Yisrael are metame more than Meisei Akum are metame, because there's more kedusha to kedushas Yisrael. So once that kedusha is gone, the tuma is all the more intense. So says Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Esr Sukkos Shnei Masr Milin Hayu Divrei Meir. Meir says it was 10 huts set up along the way. 12 milin in total. That's like the way our Mishnah had it, that one mil between each of the huts, and then 2 mil from the last hut to the tzuk. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tisha Sukkos, Vasara milin, that it was 9 Sukkos and 10 mil in total. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Chamesh Sukkos, Vasara milin, it was only 5 huts and 10 mil. Hayu v'kulan alidei eruv. How they accompany him from one to the other? They would each make an Erev Tchumen. So there would be Kona Shvisa in between each of the huts. The person who was staying in hut number one, let's say, would be Kona Shvisa right in the midpoint between hut number one and hut number two. So he's able to walk all the way from hut number one to hut number two because his Makum Shvisa is right in the middle. So he gets 2,000 amos in each direction from right in the middle. So that's why you would be able to have 4,000 amos or 2 mil between each of the huts, and you'd still be able to accompany the guy who was walking this year Mishalech. Amr Rabbi Yossi, Sachli Elazar Bini. Elazar Bini said to me, Imal Yidei Eruv, Yecholni Lassus Afil Shtei Sukkos Vasara Milin. He says, if you're going to do with an Eruv, then you could even have 2 Sukkos in 10 Milin. How so? How could you work that out? So if you have each guy make an Eruv, and don't have the guy in hut number one walk him all the way to hut number two. Have the guy in hut number one walk him halfway to hut number two. Then have a guy from hut number two come out to meet him at the halfway mark and walk him all the way to hut number two. Have a second guy stationed in hut number two, who's Kona Shvisa on the other side, who can then walk him the other way 4,000 amos. So that way you're able to have 8,000 amos between. You're able to have 8,000 amos between the two huts. You're able to have 4 mil between the two huts because you have each person only accompany him halfway and have someone else come out and meet him. So from Yerushalayim, have someone accompany him 4,000 amos. The person who's Kona Shvisa 2,000 amos in, have someone accompany him 4,000 amos. Have someone who's stationed in hut number one, who is Kona Shvisa closer to Yerushalayim, come and meet him at that 4,000 amos mark, bring him all the way to hut number one. Have another person who is stationed in hut number one, who is Kona Shvisa on the other side, walk him halfway, etc. And that way you could have 2 huts and 10 mil if you were going to do Al Yedei Eruv. He was saying it Derech Schok. There's obviously more than 2 huts. We're not employing a Reuven over here. So, Kaman Nazahad Tanya, Chutz Miachron Shaben Shaloi Gimel Lutzuk Alomin Merachuk Vros Maisav. The Braisa that says that the last guy didn't go all the way, he would just stand from a mil away and watch what was going on. Who's that going like? Come on, Rav Meir. That's going like Rav Meir, like we said in our Mishnah. I'll call sukkah for sukkah om lo harei mazon v'harei mayim. Now, by each sukkah, they offered him what to eat and what to drink. So, tana me'olam lehutzrach adam l'kach. No one ever had to take anybody up in that offer. The guy never actually ate or drank. Ella shein adam mishish l'pas pesalo, mishein l'pas pesalo. But we offer it anyway, because you can't compare somebody who has pas pesalo to someone who doesn't have pas pesalo. Psychologically, it was good for him to know that he has that option in front of him. And again, as we said, according to Rashi, he doesn't really have that option in front of him. According to the Rambam, he actually does. If he ever really needed it, he would be able to avail himself of it. So he says, so what would he do? He would take this Lashon Shel Zoharis, he would split it into two pieces. So v'naktere kulei b'sela, ask the Gemara, why don't we tie the whole thing on the rock? Why do we have to tie it partially on the animal? So kivud de mitzvah b'sir dim l'kadum u'malbin u'mias v'dayte. So we tie it partially on the animal because we're afraid that if it turns white on the rock, then we're going to know that there was kaparas avonos. Then the person is going to be so overjoyed and so excited about that, he's going to forget to finish the job of the sayur. So that's why we split it. We tie half on the rock and half on the goat. But wait a second. If you still have half on the rock, it could still turn white before you throw the goat off the cliff. And won't you still then neglect the rest of the job? So Rashi explains, no. If you have half on the goat, it will be very distracting. You're going to be focused on the goat when you have half on the goat. You're not going to be looking at the side that's on the rock. So the half that's on the goat is the part you're going to be looking at, and therefore you're going to continue to do whatever you need to do with the goat until you throw it off of the cliff. V'niktere kulei ben karnov. Why don't we tie the whole thing on the goat? Zimin de gamishle the reshe v'lavadaite. Because sometimes the way it falls off the cliff, you're not going to be able to see the top of its head, so you're not going to see if it turned white. If it turns white, it's a simon of mechilas avonos, of kaparas avonos. Tan rabbanu barishono yikoshum loshon shel zoris al pesach ulam mibachutz. Initially, they used to tie it on the pesach ulam the outside of the Pesach of the Ulam, where everybody was able to see it. The Yerushalmi has an additional sub. Yerushalmi says earlier than that, before they even got to the Pesach Ulam, it used to be everyone would have their own Lashon Shel Mitzvah Zoros and would tie it over their own windows, and everyone would have their own personal they would have a knowledge of whether their own personal averos were forgiven or not. Each person, some of them would turn white, some of them would not, but that obviously made a lot of people not so happy, so they decided to make a communal one, that Pesach Lumi Bachutz. So Hil B'Noy Yismech, and Lo Hil B'Noy Yatsevin Umizbaishin. So if it turned white, everyone was very happy. If it didn't turn white, then people were very sad and very very embarrassed about the whole thing, and it's not appropriate that people should be sad in Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the Yontif, so we didn't want that. We didn't want that to go on. Smechen would have been fine. Other Achronim say Smechen was a problem also. You don't want them to be too overjoyed on Yom Kippur. We want people to still do tshuva. We want people to still be motivated to do mitzvos. Hiskinu shiu koshen al Pesach ulam yibefnim v'adayinu mitzitzin v'roin. So they decided to tie it on the Pesach ulam on the inside, but people would still peek in, and then the word would still get out. So hil bin hayusmechin. If it turned white, everyone was happy. Lo hil bin hayotzeven, and otherwise everyone was very sad. So hiskinu shiu koshen also chetzio besala v'chetzio ben karnav. So they determined that the best thing to do was to tie it halfway on the half of it on the rock right out there by the cliff where there's only one person who could even see it, and the other half ben karnav between the horns of the animal. So he says originally they used to tie it by the Pesach Ulam on the inside. When the seer got to the Midbar, it would turn white, and everyone knew that the mitzvah was done. That even if our sins are red, they're gonna turn white like snow. That's the symbol of kapara. Loai, that's why we associate white with Yom Kippur a lot, because that's the symbol of Yom Kippur, of kapara savonos, is white. Loai magia l'machzahar. So the Mishnah said that it wouldn't even make it halfway down the har by the time it was completely dismembered. So great, so the animal's dismembered. You have all these limbs all over the place. So, yibaylu, osa nevarim, mahin ba'ana. Are you allowed to get ana from these limbs? Is someone allowed to take them and use them? He's not allowed to eat them. They're certainly not kosher, but are you allowed to use them? Are you allowed to get ana from them? So, Rav Shmuel, chadam mutarin, v'chadam rasurin. So it's a machlokas Rav Shmuel. One opinion says mutar, the other opinion says asur. What's the svara for each one? So each one learns from a pasuk. The one that says that you're allowed to get ana, dechsev bamidbar. It says bamidbar. It says that you send the seer bamidbar, which is an extra word, to darshan, that it should be hefker kamidbar, that it should be free for anybody to take, just like a midbar. The one that says asurin says the lashon of gezeira. Lashon of gezeira is a lashon koshi. It's a lashon of a chumra. So apparently there's some stringency associated with this animal, and that stringency is that even after it's not mitzvaso and it's ripped up into a whole bunch of different limbs, you're still not allowed to use any of it. Mandiyam rasurin hai midbar mayavdei. Well, if you hold it asur, what are you going to do with the word midbar? So mibayle lichetetanya, we use it for the following brisa. Hamidbara, hamidbara, bamidbar. We have three times the lashon of midbar comes up in connection to the seer. L'rabos novi givon shilo ubeis alamim, to tell us that they did this avoda throughout all the stages of the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash. That this was done throughout history whenever we had anything that resembled a Mikdash, a Mishkan or a Mikdash. V'idach ha'gzeir may avodai. Well, the opinion that focuses on midbar and says that it's mutter based on midbar, what's he going to do with the word gzeira? If he's obviously not going to use the word gzeira to tell me that the evarim are asur, else it's mutter. So what's he going to do with the word gzeira? So mibayle lichetetanya, he uses it for the following brisa. Gzeira in gzeira el chatucha. Gzeira means something that's chatucha. It's not a mountain with an incline. It's a cliff with a very steep incline where it falls right off. That's chatucha. That it's at a very steep angle. Davar acher in gzeira el davram is gazer v'yored. Gzeira means that something becomes dismembered. So gzeira is a reference not to the physical terrain. It's a reference to what happens to the animal as it's pushed off of that cliff. Davar acher gzeira shemer torah tomer ma'aseh tohu. Gzeira is to tell us that you might think that this is nonsense to throw this animal off the cliff. What are we doing over here? This doesn't look like Judaism. Tamulomer ani Hashem. Ani Hashem gezartiv ve'en lecha rishos la'arabehen. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of saying, I, Hashem, made this gezeira. It's a gezeira milfanai. We have no rishos to be maharach rav. We have no rishos to think that there's there's anything wrong with it. Amar Rav Mustavar Kamandi Amar Mutarin, that it's most Mustavar to assume that the limbs are mutar after they're thrown off the cliff. The Torah would not tell us to throw something off the cliff if it's then going to be a takala, that anybody who finds the limb is not going to realize that there's an isser and is going to be a terrible takala. The Torah wouldn't tell us to do something that's going to be a takala for other people. This is how the Rambam paskins lahalacha, that the lower matara shaleach the takala. That's what the Rambam paskins in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, Parakei Halacha Chaf Beis. In the Hagos Mayim Chaim, he says, Hu adin, if the sawyer runs away and you don't go after it to kill it, it's also mutar ba'achila, he says, because the Torah won't say shaleach the takala. So if someone finds it, it has to be that it's mutar l'chadchila. And that's what we said from the Yerushalmi before, that after the days of Shimon HaTzadik, it would run away, and the Srikin or Anashim Reikim would grab it and would eat it. In the Nitziv, in his commentary to the Torah, in the Hamak Davar, he says it's all hinted to in the Pasuk. It says in the Pasuk, El Eretz Gezera, which we darshan means it's Meskazer V'yorid, it's broken up into a million pieces as it falls down, and it says Vishalach Hamidbara, which sounds like it goes out free to the Midbar. So if he says both are possibilities. If the Dor is Zakai, so it's Yoridim Meskazer, it goes down and gets cut up. Otherwise, it goes out Hamidbara, it goes out to the Midbar and just runs on its merry way. That happens if the Dor is not Zakai Lekach. The Shara Melech raises a question, what chashash takala is there? Mm-hmm. Whoever finds it is going to find limbs of an animal that are amongst probably lots of dead animals that you could find. There's plenty of roadkill out there that wasn't a carbon and that wasn't a seer la'azazel. So the general halach is that called the parish meruba parish. You find something in a random location, you have the right to assume that it's part of the rove, and the rove is not azazel. So what kind of takala is it? It's not a takala if somebody, even if it was aser, but it would be whoever finds it has the right to follow the rove. Meaning the whole point of the takala is it's only a takala because people aren't going to be able to identify it. Well, people won't be able to identify it. So what? They're allowed to follow the rove. The halacha is they can follow the rove. So what you see from here is that even that's called the takala. That even though it's technically mutter la halacha for the person who finds it. Let's say I have a person who doesn't know whether something is asr or not, and it's a question on a drabbanon level. So for him, it's a savik drabbanon lekuli. He's allowed to eat it. I happen to know that it's not kosher. So am I allowed to feed it to him? Am I allowed to give it to him? I happen to know that and it's not just that I'm not allowed to feed it to him because I know better and I'm in the yisur of los achilim, I'm not allowed to feed somebody something. It's lifnei iver, I'm causing him to do an aveira. As far as he's concerned, it's not an aveira, he's allowed to follow the halachas of rov. But if be'emes, there's a problem there, we wouldn't create that problem. So even though halachically you're allowed to do it, this may connect to the significant machlokas rishonim when you have a tarovis of yavish biyavish. Let's say you have two kosher hamburgers and one non-kosher hamburger that get mixed up, you can't identify them. Major machlokas rishonim, what it means that it's batel barov. So some rishonim say you're allowed to eat two of them, but you can't eat all three because you know that you're doing something wrong if you eat all three. Other rishonim say you could eat all three. All three could be eaten by three different people, but not by the same person. Others say no, all three could be eaten by the same person. The Rashba says just not at the same time. And then others say, pile all three one on top of the other and eat all three of them. No problem. It's batel barov. So that's the question: Does it become heter gamur once we say batel barov and taruvas of yavish biyavish? Lach b'lach, it definitely does become heter gamur. But yavish biyavish, that's the machlokas. Probably connects a little bit to this idea over here. Okay. So it says the gemara further. The Tanur Rabbanan azazel she az v'kasha. Azazel means that it's a lashon of strong and hard. Yachl b'yishuv tamalomer b'midbar. I might think it's somewhere we're in a residential area, so the Torah says, no, in the Midbar. Uminayin Shabtzuk, how do I know by a cliff? Tamlomer Gezerah. Tani Idach, Azazel Kasha Shabaharim. Azazel means the hardest of the mountains. V'cheinu Omer, V'esayele Ha'aretz Lakach. That he takes the might of the land. Tana Debe Rabbi Shmuel, Azazel Shemechaper Al Maisu Uza Va'azael. It's called Azazel because it's Mechaper for the Maisu Uza Va'azael. What is the Maisa Uza Va'azael? So Rashi says these were Malachi Chavala that came down into the land in the days of Nama, the sister of Tuval Kayin, and they the pasuk says Ve'yiru B'nei halakimas benos ha'adam ki tavos heina, that they were machshil the benos ha'aretz ba'arayos, and that's the maisa. So what we're saying is, it's a fancy way of saying that it's mechaper for gilei arayos, because that's what the uzava zael did. That was their maisa, was gilei arayos. For sari, the shagasari raised the kasha, the sir mishlech is mechaper for everything. Why would we dafka single out arayos as what the sir mishlech is mechaper for? So let me offer him to say, okay, arayos, and therefore kal v'chomer everything else. Unclear, but there is certainly an emphasis on arayos and Yom Kippurim for whatever reason. Maybe because the yetzer hara for arayos is so much greater nowadays than the yetzer hara for just about anything else. I guess money, but arayos and money pretty much are the big ones. So maybe because of that. But there is obviously the laning on Yom Kippur, mincha. There is an emphasis on arayos dafka on Yom Kippurim. Tan rabbanon es mishpatei ta'asu dvarim shel mali nichtvu dinu sheyichtvu. Mishpatim refer to things that even if the Torah would not have commanded them, it would make sense. We would have figured out on our own that these should be laws in any religious system. Ve'eluhen, and they are avodas kochavim v'gilei arayos u'shfichas damim v'gezel u'birchas Hashem. These are very logical things. If you're going to be a religious person, you can't do avodah zara, can't do gilei arayos, shfichas damim, stealing. You can't curse God. Es chukosai tishmoru. But then we talk about chukim dvarm shasatan meshev aleihem. These are things that the Satan responds to and gets all excited about. Velu hein, achilas chazir, eating pig, luvishas shatnis, and wearing shatnis, v'chalitzas yevama, doing chalitza for yevama, v'taras mitzora, v'sir mishtalech, the tara process for mitzora, and sending out the sir mishtalech. These are all chukim. V'shem etomer maisa tohu heim, unless you think, well, it's a bunch of silliness, it doesn't have any meaning to it. Tamalomer ani Hashem chakaktiv, v'en lecha rishos laharben. Baruch Hu says, I Hashem made up these dinim, and you do not have a right to be maharher after these dinim. These dinim are all for real. So the Achronim are a little bit bothered with the choice of chukim. There are plenty of other chukim. In fact, there's one that's called Zos Chukas HaTorah. Paraduma doesn't make the list of chukim. We're giving a list of classic things that we can't explain, and that the Satan is going to be Mekatri, the Satan is going to be Meshavalein, and he's going to say, what are you guys doing? So Tosi Shana points out there are a lot of other things that aren't on the list. Efer Paraduma, Kisvei Adam, lots of things. So the Marsha explains that all the ones chosen by the Braisa are things that have a heter b'makom acher. They're all isurin that in somehow they are mutter in certain situations. He said, what about the chazer? You're never allowed to eat pig. The Torah allows the moach shel dog, which is apparently has the same tam as the tam of chazer. The Gemara says Maseches Chulin. Gemara says in Chulin Daf Kuf Tesam Beis that called the asulan rachman asharulan kavase, that anything that the Torah asks, it gives up for everything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away from us, he gives us something else that's just like it, so we can have at least a time of that hana of Olam Hazeh. And it gives the example by a chazer, mocha de shibuta. There's a certain fish, a shibuta fish, the chazer, the moach of the shibuta is just like the chazer. So we have that's mutter makom acher. Shatnis is mutter and tzitzis and bigdei kuna. Eishas ach, the Torah allows be yibum, and alidei chalitza she becomes nesar again. Tzipori mitzor and the sir mishalech are both carbon are both carbonos that are where you have Lashem and the second one is sent away, where you have one that goes Lashem, one that's used as real carbon that we actually use, and the other one that gets sent away to the Satan, so they get sent away for whatever reason. So that those are the things that the Satan picks on, where you have two things that are exactly the same, and yet one of them is kosher and good, and the other one is bad and is aser. How's that? How's that? Does that make any sense? That's the element of chok that we're focused on over here. Tan Rabbanan. Amos I mitame begadim. So he said, when is it mitame begadim? So Tan Rabbanan. When does the guy become tame to be mitame even his begadim? Tan Rabbanan. Hamishaleach mitame begadim. The mishaleach is mitame begadim. Ve'ein hashaleach es hamishaleach mitame begadim. But the shaleach es hamishaleach, the people who would walk with him are not mitame begadim. They're totally fine. Yachl mishiyatu chutz l'chomas azara tamalomer hamishaleach. You might think that it's the second he walks out of the azara, that's why it says hamishaleach. Sounds like it has to be that they already sent him on his way. So iya mishaleach yachalat shiagia letzuk tamlomer ve'a mishaleach. So if you say mishaleach, you might think only once he actually gets to the cliff, that's when he's mitame begadim. So that's why the pasuk says ve'a mishaleach haketzad mishiyatzu chutz l'chomus Yerushalayim div Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda's shita is the second he goes outside of chomus Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yossi Omer Azazel Bikibes Ad Sheigia Litzuk, that it's until he gets to the Tzuk, that until then he's not Metami Begadim. Rabbi Shimon Omer Vamashaleach Hasasir La Azazel Yichabis Begadav Zorku Bas Rosh Metami Begadim. Even when he gets to the Tzuk, he's not Metami Begadim yet. He has to actually chuck it off of the cliff, and only then he's Metami Begadim. So three different opinions about when he's Metami Begadim. The Rambam in Hilchos Parah Aduma Parakei Alachavav, the Rambam passes like Rabbi Yehuda, which is like the Tanakam of our Mishnah, that as soon as he's Yotzi Mechutz Le'ir, he's Metame Begadim. The Rush quotes like Rabbi Yossi that he's not Metame until he's Magia Litzuk. That's the Rush in the Seder Avodas Yom HaKippurim, says that he's not Metame Begadim until he's Magia Litzuk, until he gets all the way out to that area. So the Me'iri writes over here that Rabbi Shimon is Cholik on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi in terms of the definition of the term Mishaleach. According to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, it means that he's Malave the Sa'ir. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's the beginning of the Levoy. According to Rabbi Yossi, it's the Sof of the Levoy. It's the end of the accompaniment of the Sa'ir. Rabbi Shimon holds that Mishaleach means something else. It doesn't mean the walking of the Sa'ir, the accompanying of the Sa'ir. It means being Dochif the Sa'ir La'azazel. It means chucking it off of the cliff. And that's why he's only Mitam B'Shas Techifa. It's all the whole Machlokas is based on how to touch the word properly. Okay, Bez Hashem, we'll pick up with the next Mishnah, going back to the Kohen Gadol, Bez Hashem, tomorrow, and his Avodah inside the Beis HaMikdash.